stories in the Bible, and I would like to, if I may, say that this story of Luke chapter 15, maybe it won't sound like it when I speak about it, but that story of Luke chapter 15 has been on my mind, I think I could say, more than any other passage in the Bible for the last couple of years, and it's been a blessing to me. I've enjoyed it, I've appreciated it, and I trust and hope that it will be a blessing to others that are gathered here today. Luke chapter 15, verse number 11, and he said, "A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me.' And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, 'How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants.'" And I hope to be able to answer the question as to why it was that he said to make me as one of thy hired servants. What was it in his mind that caused this young man in the far country to desire to go home to be made like unto his father's servants, his hired servants? And he arose and came to his father. And when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son." But the father said to his servants, "Bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fattest calf, and kill it. Let us eat and be merry, for this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found," and they began to be merry. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to his house, he heard music and dancing, and he called one of his servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, "Thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound." And he was angry, and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him, and he answering said to his father, "Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandments. And yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf." And he said unto him, "Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found." One other verse, please, in Philippians chapter 3. Verse number 13, another verse that I think of quite often. Philippians chapter 3 and verse number 13. "Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind." Forgetting those things which are behind. Tell you one thing very plainly. I never have ministry meetings except in our assembly at home. And I'll tell you a very honest truth. I like gospel meetings way ahead of ministry meetings. Because in gospel meetings, you get the folks, if you can get them to come, you kind of expect to see results. You kind of expect to see lives changed and people get saved and they're happy and it changes their life and makes me happy and makes them happy. But one thing I don't like about ministry meetings is because nobody expects anything to happen and it just seems that nothing ever happens. That must be why we don't have prayer meetings before ministry meetings. At least back home we don't. But at the same time, I've come down here and they asked if I would have a few ministry meetings. And so at least I'm going to try and tell you some of the things that have been a blessing to me. And I hope in some little way they'll be a blessing to somebody that's here as well. But this story here in Luke chapter 15 is a story that all of us that preach the gospel, we use it many times in the gospel. And I wouldn't take it for a moment. I wouldn't take it away from the gospel from you. And for years I used it in the gospel, and I never thought of anything else except this story is for the gospel, but I don't believe that anymore at all. In fact, I think this story is for Christians. In fact, both these young men that we know so well in Luke chapter 15, the elder son, the elder brother, and the young son, these are believers. They're sons. So let's get that straight and clear in our minds right away. And I would like to look at it the fact that this world is in a struggle to control our minds, our thinking. Everything is geared to control our thinking. That's why we have all the sales seminars, and that's why we have all the grocery stores with the biggest and the best. And you go in the grocery store and they've got all kinds of shampoo there that tells you how to make your hair shiny and grow better and do all sorts of things. And they're all in a struggle to control your mind. In fact, a little while ago, about a couple of years ago, I saw a seminar advertised in Toronto. It was the company was advertising that they were having a direct mail seminar. How to get the best out of your direct mailing. Well, it was $300 for one day, 6 hours. I thought, that's a lot of money. But anyway, I thought, I'm going to go and just find out how to get the best out of the mailing. See, we do a lot of mailing. I thought, you spend $1,000 in mailing. How can we do better? I learned a lot of this thing. But one thing I learned when I went there, they had a great big banner up over the top there, and there was maybe 75 people there. And this great big banner said, controlling the mind. And that's what it was all about. The whole thing was how to influence people's mind, how to control people's mind, how to direct their thinking. And the world is taken up with directing your thinking. And I would like to direct your thinking as well a little bit. I would like to, hopefully, that this story will direct your thinking and maybe help to control your thinking a little bit like I think it has done for me. And yet I got a lot of improvements to make on it nevertheless. But here we find a story that's so well known. This young man, something has started to control his mind. And this young man has left his father's house. And it's not too hard to imagine that he's gone off into the far country. And we don't have to imagine very hard as we look around Winnipeg or any other large city or small city for that matter to see that there's many things to control the minds of young people and older people. We have the drop-in center in Woodstock, and let me tell you something I see there where young people's minds are controlled. Controlled by smoking and marijuana and alcohol and sex. There's the three or four things that their mind is all taken up with thinking about. And that is the great struggle in the world, controlling the minds of the people. And I see so many things that the kids can get into today. And I'm absolutely amazed when I see God preserving our families in the midst of such a world. But maybe you're a believer here today, and maybe you have done what I've done in the past. I've gone to the far country. Yeah, I've wallowed in it. I went a long way. And I wouldn't want to tell you some of the things I did. And yes, I was a Christian. I was a believer. And it was just like this man here. He went down to the far country. And in the far country, he had turned his back on his father. He had turned his back on his blessings of home. And down there in the far country, you see the elder brother accused him that he had wasted his substance with riotous living. And not only had he wasted his substance with riotous living, he had wasted on harlots. And he was living in the far country, and it was a sad, sorry sight. And this young man is spending the bucks. And finally, he gets down to the bottom line where he's got nothing left. And maybe you have been there. Maybe you're there today. I don't know your background. In fact, I hardly know the names of anybody here. And maybe there's somebody here today and you're a long way away. And you wonder to yourself, I'd like to get back. Is there any hope for me to ever come back? You know, maybe you haven't gone into the far country as far as open sin is concerned, and thank God if you haven't. But maybe you're there sometimes anyway. I was in a house some time ago, and the lady of the house, a Christian, she was telling me that she was having problems with kids. And she was having a lot of problems with kids. It was an ongoing problem. And I think the biggest problem maybe was the mother, I don't know. But when I went there and got to know her quite well, she's in the assembly and trying to help her and trying to visit with her and been saved a couple of years and came from a desperate problem in the background and her husband as well, just as many problems. And here she is screaming at the children. I tell you, she will just shriek and scream at the kids. And she said that day, she said, she sat down at the table and she was so angry. And she said, I just can't control myself. I just fly off the handle. I just can't control myself. You know what she really was. She didn't tell me that, but she was in the far country. We've all been there that way. And just then, as she started screaming at the kids again, and said she couldn't control herself, just then the phone rang. She left the kids and went over to the phone on the wall and picked it up and plunked it on her ear and hello! And you know something? All of a sudden, on the other end was her friend, like a real good friend. Well, I'll tell you, butter would melt in her mouth. She changed instantly. The girl who had just finished saying that she couldn't control herself. She totally, completely changed. And she was just as nice as pie. She talked away to that lady, as nice as pie, while the kids carried on in the living room. And I sat in the kitchen, and she had a lovely discussion with the lady and hung up goodbye and hung it up. And right as soon as she got the phone hung up, she went back in there. She ripped in those kids, sat down, said, I just can't control myself. You know, the truth of it is, far too often our children have to come home and maybe they have to say, well, you know, out in the backyard, before they come in, they say, boy, I'll tell you, step careful today because mom's in one of her moods. Or older brother will say to the younger brother, you be careful, boy, Dad, he tell you something, be careful today, because Dad's in one of his frame of mind, you know. And you know what that is? That is being in a far country. And we have all been there. Oh, yeah, maybe you haven't gone down to the tavern, and maybe you haven't done some of those things that are being done by others. But as believers, we can be in a far country. And all the time, there's a struggle on in this world to control our mind, to control our thinking, and the devil's purpose and aim and object is to control our minds and control our thoughts and control our thinking. And he's powerful and he is succeeding in so many cases to control our thinking. And yet we have been given the power and the ability to control our thinking. This young man, he's in the far country. He starts to realize he's wasting his substance with life he's living, and he decides to start to think. He begins to think. It's a good thing to think. I can see him as he would sit down on the side of his swill bucket, just finished feeding the swine, you know, and he's looking at the husk of the swine that he'd eaten, his belly's empty, and he thinks to himself, my, I'd just like to have a feast there, but whether he did or not, I don't know. But he looked it all over, and he began to think. And I hope in these few nights of meetings that as believers we will start to think and that we will start to maybe change our thinking. And this young man, he started to think and he started to change his thinking. And maybe you're in the far country today. And maybe you're starting to change your thinking. And I hope this story will help you to start changing your thinking. And know what he started to change his thinking about? He started to change his thinking about himself. He acknowledged his condition. He acknowledged the fact that, look, I'm in sad shape. I'm in pitiful condition. And I've got to do something about it. And so automatically, he started to think about back home. I can see him sitting on the side of the swill bucket or maybe on the side of the trough where the pigs are going at it. And he starts to think about back home. He starts to think about elder brother, you know. Boy, he starts to think pretty serious about that elder brother. And as he ponders elder brother, he thinks if there's a man, I'll tell you, if ever there was a Christian with the elder brother, he looked the part. But there's something about brethren, you know. You can see through them. Oh, it takes a while. But we can, after a while, you can start to see through the Christian. Maybe you can't just put your finger on the nail. And maybe you can't exactly express what you're thinking. But you still start to see through things. You start to recognize and you start to see the ones that have a genuine, honest interest in you and the ones that don't. And this young brother, he's sitting down and he starts to think about the other brother back home. And he thinks to himself, maybe I'll go home and get to be made like unto the elder brother. I mean, that'd be a great thing. I'm telling you something, he looked like a Christian. He dotted every T and he dotted every I. And he crossed every T. And he looked the part. I'm sure that, and I'm not saying a Christian shouldn't look like a Christian. Don't get me wrong. Don't take wrong what I'm trying to say. But I can look the part and have absolutely no love or appreciation for the Father and have no communion with the Father. And I can look the part and I can be nothing more than nothing less than a legalistic brother or sister. And I can chop people's heads off with my tongue. And that young brother down there in the far country, there was something, maybe he couldn't express it in words, but he thought about that elder brother back home. That elder brother, did he have any interest in the young brother down the far country? Did he? Well, it says many years had gone by. Has the elder brother ever been down to visit and try and rescue that younger brother? Has he ever been there? No. He hasn't shown a particle of interest in him. And as you read the story through, you plainly see the elder brother has got absolutely no love for that younger brother in the far country. He's a brother that's got all the rules and regulations. And let me tell you this, it's a lot easier to live by rules and by regulations than it is to live in communion with the Father in heaven. Far easier. Oh, it doesn't bring you any happiness, and you're miserable, but it's a lot easier. A lot easier. And there's many Christians that are doing it. I used to do it. Maybe I still do it. So, I'm trying to change. But, is there any like that here? Interest in the young brother of the far country? You know, I've been 32 years in the assembly. And in the 32 years in the assembly, you know, there's in the assembly, for those who are gathered, they understand what the elders and those that are doing, I want to say it this way, the work of an elder. And in all those years that I was in the assembly, there were those who did the work of an elder, or at least there were those who were, we said they were elders. And in those 32 years, I suppose that the elders were doing the work of an elder, that they would be visited. Yeah, I need it. And there was times when I desperately needed it. I would sure be happy today, too, if one did. In those 32 years, I suppose if an elder was doing the work of an elder and the assembly was, say, 50, 60 in it, and there's 3, 4, or 5 elders, however many there might be, and if they divided it all up, it wouldn't be too difficult that every, well, let's be reasonable, let's not be too stressful with them. Maybe every 6 months they could come down and sit down in my house, not invited, I mean, just on their own, just to walk to the door and knock on the door and come in and sit down with their Bible and give you a few thoughts they've been enjoying and try and encourage you along the way. I suppose it wouldn't be too much to ask, maybe, what, every 6 months? So in 32 years in the assembly, that'd be 64 visits I've had. I haven't had 64 visits. Well, I've invited them to the house. They've come and we've chit-chatted and chewed the rag. But I haven't had 64 visits. So we'll take it easier then. Once a year. Wouldn't once a year be asking too much? Well, I don't think so. So that would be 32 visits. Well, in 32 years in the assembly, no, I haven't had 32 visits. And I've been in 5 different assemblies in those 32 years. And, okay, so we'll say once every 2 years. Oh, come on, now, that's not asking too much. So in those 32 years, that'd be 16 visits. Well, I haven't had 16. So if you said, well, every 3 or 4 years, I suppose you could say, well, that'd be, what, every 8 years I'd get this. You know, I haven't had that. In fact, in all the years I've been in the assembly, you know how many visits I've had by a brother? And he was not even what they called an elder, but he was doing the work. You know how many visits I've had? One. And I'll tell you something. From my heart today, I thank God for that brother. Because I was in the far country. And he came, and he drove a long way to get there. And he called up and asked me to come. And I can remember the day that dear Mr. White came to our house. And he's an old man. I was just sitting in the other day. And I thanked him for what he had done so long ago. But I wrote him a few years ago as well. And thanked him. They drove all that distance. And I can remember, like it was yesterday, he came to the door. I'll tell you, my wife and I needed him. And he stood at the door with his Bible under his arm. And he came in and he sat down right there. And opened up the Bible and began to speak to us. And he helped us. He spent the evening with us. I'll tell you, it changed my life. We're losing folks amongst us in the assembly. There's just no getting around it. Why? Because it's not going to be done. You can ask me to leave, brother, and I'll go back home to Ontario, and I have to go home. I like to be in my own bed, although that's the day I've got. But I can tell you something. There's a great need amongst us. a desperate need. And this young brother here, he's in the far country, this young son. And the older brother at home, with all his rules and his regulations, and he looked the part of a Christian. He never even so much as went around a block. He never so much as wrote a letter. He never so much as made a phone call. He never even so much as bothered his head with the younger brother that's down there in the far country. And that young brother, he could see this. He could see this. He could. It's simple and plain. Oh, he couldn't maybe describe it to you, but when he sat down the side of that pig trough and he began to think about back home, he thought to himself, do I want to be made like older brother? No, not like him. Then he started to think a little further. He thought about the servants at home. He thought to himself, yeah, I'd like to go back home, and I'd like to be made like those hired servants. And if you're in the far country today, and every last one of us are, let's face it, every last one of us are in the far country to some extent or another, myself included. And I'm probably farther off than most of you. And kind of struggling along, you know, the old sign that says, it was nailed on the side of the road. It was when you turn in the road in the springtime, it said, choose your ruts well, you're going to be in them a long time. And it's pretty hard to get out of the ruts, because we get into the ruts. And there we are, wallowing along, and you just start to get out and you fall back in again. But this young brother, he started to look at those servants. He thought to himself, I'd like to be made like those hired servants. Why? I think the answer is here, why. And maybe if you're in the far country today and you're trying to get out of the rut, wouldn't you like to be made like the hired servant? I hope you would, as I try and explain it to you here. That hired servant back home. That young brother, I suppose I can see him, he kicks over the swill tail, and he climbed over the fence, and he heads up the road, he turned around, bids goodbye, adios to those swine, those pigs. And he heads for home, and he's heading up the road. And as he's heading up that road, you know, his heart's taken up with thoughts, I'm going to go home, and I'm going to be honest with my father, and I'm going to just tell my father, make me like one of the hired servants. And he's just heading up the road. And the father, he's back home. You know, the father's been busy all the time. The father's been very busy. The father's been occupied all those many years, because that's what the Bible says. Those many years he's been gone, the older brother says. And those many years the father's been busy. You know what he's been doing? He's been out in the barn. He's been keeping the calf fat. He's all ready. What is he waiting for? He's waiting for the older brother or the younger brother to come back home and to sit down and enjoy the fattest calf. The fattest calf is for either one of them. Because the elder brother at home has not been enjoying communion with the father, and the younger brother in the far country has not been enjoying communion with the father either. Then neither one of them have. I hope to be able to show you that the older brother hasn't been enjoying communion either. And as that young brother's hit up the road, the father's been out in the barn, they come in, he's looking up the road, and he sees. Oh, he sees that familiar gate. Maybe it's like when I was in the hospital one time a few years ago, for a few days. It was in the days when, back a few years ago, they had visiting hours. And, you know, in visiting hours 2 to 4, whatever it was, the hallway's really crowded, that trestle floor, people walking up and down. But as sure as my wife would step off the elevator to start walking, with all the racket and noise and everything else, I could hear her feet on that floor before she left the door, and I knew it was her coming. Because you just get used to it. You just get that, you just get to hear it. And you could hear just the way she walked, and I knew it was her, maybe with the shoes she was wearing then, I don't know. And this father, he's looking, and he sees that familiar gate, and that son is coming. And that father lifts up his eyes, and I can see his face start to shine. And that father stands up, and he begins to run. He runs out the front door, he runs down the stairs, he runs down the path, and he runs up the road. And as he's running along up the road, he's coming with might and main, and he's got his arms outstretched, and you know the story so well. The younger son receives him into the father's arms, and the father welcomes him home. And the younger son starts to tell him how truthfully, honestly he is. He wants to tell him to make me like one of the hired servants, but he doesn't get out the words. You know what the father does? After he welcomes him home, he turns to the hired servants. I want to ask you something. How did he turn to the hired servants? Weren't they way back home? No, they weren't. You know why? Because they loved the one that the father loved. And as the father is sitting in that house, and he looks up the road, those servants are all occupied with the father. And the one the father loves, they love. And they see the father lift his eyes up, and he looks up the road. And those servants, they lift up their eyes, and they look up the road. And the father stands up, and the father starts to run. I don't know how many servants there was, but all those servants, the father followed the father up the road. And they're all milling around, and standing around. Maybe, I think there was a dozen of them. Maybe 20. I don't know. No bunch of them. At least there was, in the plural, there was at least two. And they're all standing there, and the father turns to the servants. And they're rejoicing. They're thankful. They're happy that that young son has come home. They're rejoicing. Why? Because they love the one the Father loves. Do you and I truthfully love the one that the Father loves? Do you have time, and do I have time to go down and try and rescue the ones that are wallowing and gone into sin and sadness and gone away from God? Do we truly love them? Are we prepared to open our homes up and our doors up and our houses up and take the time with them? Or we let the elder brother back home and think, look what he's doing. Look what he does. I tell you, isn't that awful? So, the father turns to the servant and he says to them, bring forth the best robe and put it on. You know one reason that younger son wanted to be made like unto the hired servants? Because that younger son recognized that those servants had access to the father's treasures. And he wanted to be made like unto them. Not only that he might love the one the father loved, he wanted to live his life out of love, not out of rules and regulations. And they turned to the father turned to those servants and said, bring forth the best robe and put it on him. And put the rings on his finger and the shoes on his feet. And so they took those different things. I'm not going to go into what they mean. You probably know better than I what some of those mean. The garment of righteousness and a ring eternal. And the shoes a new walk. And some of us in the far country, and all of us are to one extent or another. We have to acknowledge we are not living our life in communion and fellowship with the Father anything like we should. We can go through our religious practices, but know so little reality of living in communion with the Father. So they all go back home. They bring out the best, the fatted calf, and they kill it, and they set it out, and it begins to be married. The elder brothers in the field. And he comes, and he draws nigh to the house. And he hears what's going wrong. And so, know what he does? He calls one of the servants. If you look in your dictionary, and Newbery Bible shows it, the word's a different word than the servant that went with the father to meet the son. It's a different word altogether. In fact, the word is a young servant, a young man, a young lad. And that elder brother that's in the field, he comes in close, and he hears the music and the dancing, and he calls that young lad to him, that young servant. This young servant hasn't been with the other servants to welcome the son home. It's not that he wouldn't go, but he hasn't been there. And as he is with the elder brother asks him what's happened. What he says, what did he say? Thy brother has come, and thy father has killed the fat calf. You know, if those other servants, the older servants, when they call it, were like a lot of us, tell you something. We'd be dusting. And we'd be talking. It's like a brother called me about, three, 4 years ago one day. He called up and he said, he said to me, I hated what he said. I don't like anybody saying that to me. He said, Steve, are you busy? Well, you know, this preaching business, I hate to say that I'm not busy. I hate to let on be saying I'm busy and bragging or something. And so I always get around that. I said, well, what's on your mind? Well, he said, would you be able to meet me for coffee? I said, sure. Well, he said, when do you have in mind? Well, he said, now. Yeah, I got time. No problem. He lived about 100 miles away. I said, I'll meet you halfway in London. So I drove to London, met at the coffee shop. And he sat down and he began to tell me. I used to visit him before we moved away from where we lived. A number of years ago, many years ago, maybe 14, 15 years ago, I failed. I should have visited him an awful lot more, even after I was away. I wrote him a few times, but I didn't spend a lot of time. I have to acknowledge I was like the elder brother. And anyway, he sat down in the restaurant in the coffee shop, and he started to tell me about the past and his life. And I tell you, that man, I believe,
was restored to the Lord before ever I saw him. I only tried to encourage him on the way. But a few days later, I was speaking to a brother, and he says, I hear about brother so-and-so. And, he says, I hear he's been restored. I said, yeah, I'm thankful, and I was happy. Does he still go where he used to go? I said, well, yeah, but he's not amongst us. Well, he said, then I wouldn't put much thought in it. You know something? I thought, what in it? In fact, I wish I had it for him afterwards, and then my wife said, just well, I didn't tell him. But, you know, what a pathetic situation. Well, he dresses to the team. The ones that the Father loves. And I believe to a great extent he's carrying on a work that he would profess to be a work of God. He's like this man here, lo, these many years have I served thee. And isn't that the truth about with every last one of us? We can look back and say, these many years have I served thee. In fact, that elder brother, when the father comes out, the elder brother let the cat out of the bag. And I believe this is what the younger son could see in the elder brother, although he maybe couldn't be able to put it in words. And I wonder if there's not a lot of us here, maybe every last one of us here today, that are painted by the same brush that this elder brother is painted by. Because this elder brother, when the father comes out, the elder brother, you know, he let the cat out of the bag. If you watch everyone long enough, you'll start to find out what's in their heart. Come on. Or another, after a while, comes up. We can put up a good front. We're pretty good at it, you know. We get pretty high marks in putting on a front. And this fellow here has been putting on a front for a good long time. And he's been getting good marks. But he says to the father, these many years have I served thee, neither transgressed I thy commandments. In other words, you know, I've kept the rules, and I've kept the regulations. I've done things exactly as they should be done. But he said, you never leave me. In other words, the very same thing that the younger son wanted and got, the elder son wanted, but he didn't get. The only reason the elder son didn't go out into the far country was because the father put a fence around him, and he didn't give to him. He said, these many years have I served thee, and thou never gave this to me. What to do? Oh, read it. That I might make merry. What do you mean, make merry? Isn't he home? Isn't he looking the part of a Christian? Isn't he serving the Father? Isn't he all taken up in service to the Lord, you might say? Using today's scriptural language, serving the Lord? Isn't he all taken up with that? Sure he is. But he wants, in his heart, he wants to make merry. So he has never enjoyed communion with the Father either. And that younger son of the far country could see it. And who did he want to make merry with? He wanted to make merry with my friends. You know what that shows me? The elder brother's friends were not his father's friends. And the elder brother's friends were not the servant's friends, because the servants loved the one that the father loved. And the servants had a tremendous love for the one the father loved. And their heart and mind is moved with compassion for the ones that the father loved. There's a tremendous need among us as Christians. We need to know something of love. And I hope maybe in the back of my mind, I have in mind to speak a subject, and maybe it's easier to speak it when White's not here. But I have spoken this once in Burgessville in the assembly where we are, what I have in mind to speak on. Maybe I shouldn't even tell you what I have in mind to speak on, but I'd like to speak one night on husbands love new wives. And I've spoken that one time when my wife was there, so it's not something I've not spoken on before when she wasn't there, but maybe it's easier to speak when she's not here. But nevertheless, what do we know about love? I believe that it's actually possible, and the scriptures teach it's possible, and make it very plain that it's possible, to set our affections wherever we want, wherever we want. That's why the Bible says, set not your affections, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. Set your affection on things above, not in those things that are above. We can set our affection wherever we want. We can be all taken up with our job. We can be all taken up with our house, with our family, and get everything set on them. And I know we have to take time and spend time on these things, but we need amongst us brethren and sisters raised up by God that are going to take and set their affection on the Lord's people. And they're going to see a tremendous need.
And you don't have to be 30, 40, 50, 60 years of age, and you don't have to count the money, and you don't have to be the correspondent, and you don't have to be the elder to set your affection on the Lord's people. And you don't have to be one of the elders to grow and take time, one of the recognized elders to grow. In fact, how you recognize the elders by the work that they're doing. And younger men, younger sisters, can do tremendous good in taking time to grow and spend time to sit down and discuss and encourage and to help others that are going along through life. We're living in a world that is tremendous opposition. There's everything standing in the way of our young people today to ever stand to survive in this world. And I wonder, as we look at fellow believers, sons and daughters, I wonder, do we show kindness to them? When last did we call up that young man and say, look, would you get you have Tim Hortons for a coffee and sit down, not to preach at him, but to let him know you love him? What do we know of this? So little of it. And I believe if only we would put this in practice, and I have been telling myself this for a good many years now, only I would put it in practice, that I might truly show kindness and tenderness and compassion. And if that had been the case, that young son in the far country would have longed, would have desired to come home. What to do? To be made like unto the elder brother. That would have been his desire. We need amongst us those that have been raised up by the Lord. How do you get raised up by the Lord? Maybe that's a poor expression. You know, somehow or another, it's high in the sky, and you stand back and you keep thinking, well, Lord, raise me up. But it doesn't happen that way. You know how it happens? Setting your affection. And forgetting the things that are behind. And if you've been in the far country, don't be taken up with things that are in the past. And the things that you regret. And the things that you've done. And the things that you wish you hadn't have done. And the things you wish you had have done. Don't be taken up with that. And don't let anybody else remind you about it. Be taken up with the fact forgetting the things that are behind and pressing onward. Because there's a future out here for us in the world today. Yes, there is. In service to the Lord. In loving those that the Father loves. Because the Father loves the worst broken on the side of the street. And the Father loves the worst individual that swallows up the street. Yes, the drug addicts and the dope addicts. Yes, the Lord's people's children that have turned their back in bitterness and gone away. You know why? I can blame nobody but myself. Oh, yes, we can find fault with a father and mother. And look at us, fathers and mothers. We all know we have failed so miserably. But we don't just need the father and the mother. We need every last one of us that are going to take time to sit down with the young people amongst us today and take time to talk to them and help them and to encourage them and to make your home open. I'm thankful in the little assembly where we are, there's two couples in the last few weeks, last couple of months. But there's about 28 or 30 in the fellowship now, and there's about 45 children. And they're all young, mainly young couples, and they've got a number of children. They're deaf background farmers, and some of them got large families. And there's a number of teenagers, about 10 of them. There's a sister, she runs the Christian bookstore in Woodstock, and I met her, and just visiting with her, and in time started to show her about the truth of the assembly, and she left the gathering where she was, and she gathered amongst us. You know, she didn't look around and ask, what can I do? Well, the one thing she did ask, she was only there a few weeks, and she asked, would you mind if I started to bake the bread to use at the Lord's Supper each day? Sure, help yourself. We were buying it before. So she has something to do. But you know what she does? Once a month, the first Sunday of every month, she lives in a little bit of apartment, and she puts a dinner on for every last one of the teenagers, and they come down there, anyone that's 13 years of age and over. And, you know, on that Sunday of that month, for some of the older kids come that Sunday of that month, what to do? To be there, to go to Maryland. And one of them that comes is about 20 years old and is engaged to be married, and his father and mother got saved just a while back, and sad to say, he never heard the gospel till he was up in years. In fact, it's Gary Sackwriter who signed the letter here today, and their son is about 21, and he's not saved, and pretty wild. I'll tell you something, Maryland has won that young fellow's affections, and he came along last Sunday, or the Sunday before, whatever time was the first Sunday of the month, and he came along, and he brought his girlfriend with him to the breaking of bread and to the ministry meeting for one reason only. That he could be with his girlfriend of Marilyn for lunch. What is she trying to do? She's trying to show affection and kindness in young people. She's a young sister herself, 31 years of age, and she's single. And she goes to a lot of work. And she goes to a lot of preparation Saturday afternoon to get all this food set out for about 15 or 18 young people. And she's not well-to-do. And I know she has a struggle to keep the Christian bookstore going. She doesn't even as much as have a car because she can't afford it. And she is trying to do what she can do. And I can tell you that she's a tremendous blessing amongst us as a people of God.